From the City of Angels near the Pacific Ocean, good morning, good evening, wherever you may be across the nation, around the world. I'm George Norrie. Welcome to Coast AM. Later on tonight, those open lines followed by Black Eyed Children. Try to sleep after that. And hold on to your chairs. This is going to be one heck of a coast-to-coast ride tonight. Here's what's happening. Hurricane Dorian has strengthened now to an extremely dangerous Category 4 storm with maximum sustained winds near 140 miles an hour. That's huge. The storm's change in intensity was detected by a Hurricane Hunter aircraft. The news has raised fears that Dorian could become the most powerful hurricane to hit Florida's east coast in nearly 30 years. With us now is our affiliate WIOD 610 AM's Dean Buccio on the line. Dean, what's the latest situation?
Yeah, the latest situation is a little more optimistic right now because the forecasters are showing us the cone turning a little bit more north instead of taking a direct hit here in the South Florida area. And you're talking Miami-Dade, Broward County, and even West Palm Beach and the Palm Beaches in Palm Beach County. But don't give up and turn off the TV and the radio because this storm could move either direction. So they're saying right now it's possibly going to skirt along the east coast of Florida from north of Palm Beach County. We're talking Martin County and St. Lucie County. But again, it could waver either way. So you can't take your eyes off of the forecast at this time, George.
Okay, stay safe, Dean. What a situation. You know, yesterday we did our intention experiment to slow down the hurricane, to push it out of the way. I got to tell you, if this, all day, meteorologists have been talking about this storm coming right at Florida, and it was going to be huge. If for some reason this thing moves away, I got to think that this experiment had a lot to do with it. You had a lot to do with it. That's an amazing possibility. Let's see what happened. This just in, Sirhan Sirhan, the man convicted of assassinating Robert F. Kennedy back in 1968, has been hospitalized after apparently being stabbed in a San Diego prison. California corrections officials did not identify Sirhan. He's 75 years old as the victim, but a source has confirmed to the Associated Press that it was the man serving a life sentence in connection with the death of Kennedy, a then U.S. senator from New York, who was slain at the Ambassador Hotel here in Los Angeles after winning the 1968 Democratic presidential primary in California. Sirhan was said to be in stable condition after the attack. Circumstances that led to the stabbing were not immediately known. We have been in touch previously with his brother Munir, trying to arrange an interview with Sirhan Sirhan in prison. That hasn't happened yet, obviously. But if we do get a hold of the brother, we will update you if we can. Law enforcement officers in Virginia have seized enough fentanyl to kill 14 million people, busting a massive three-state drug ring as part of what they called Operation Cookout. The 35 suspects were arrested, four others on the run. Los Angeles Angels pitcher Tyler Skaggs died after accidentally overdosing on a mixture of the painkillers, fentanyl, and opioids, as well as alcohol, according to an autopsy report released Friday. The 27-year-old Skaggs was found dead in his Southlake, Texas hotel room on July 1st, hours before the Angels were to play the Texas Rangers. Fiji police were investigating after a crying baby and the bodies of five family members found this week on the side of a cliff. The victims may have been poisoned. A man who police say is a witch doctor and his wife are the prime suspects. Well, Valerie Hopper, who achieved fame as Rhoda, as the classic sitcom Mary Tyler Moore Show, and then continued as the character Rhoda in the very popular spinoff series, has died after a long battle with cancer. Valerie Harper was 80 years old. The world's largest economy isn't growing fast enough, according to one market expert who believes the U.S. will soon face a major labor shortage. More immigrants, he says, can help make up the difference. A measure of how Americans view the strength of the economy fell to the lowest level in almost 3 years. reflecting growing worries about the U.S. trade war with China that's led to higher and higher tariffs. The final consumer sentiment survey fell to 89.8% in August from a high of 98.4 in July. Dr. John Curtis, onlinecolumnist.com, on with us. John, what's going on here?
Well, we've got a lot of news out there. I mean, you know this. People got bombarded with the idea, you know, this inverted yield curve, which is now pretty damn inverted. I mean, this is really a harbinger of recession is, you know, now in the news on a daily basis. And I think, you know, the markets have been moving sideways up and down over the last month. And I think there's a lot of fear out there and anxiety. Now, some of the metrics are not showing yet that there's been any reduction whatsoever in consumer spending. So while the Michigan survey is more what they call a sentiment survey, which is, you know, measuring, trying to measure, you know, kind of anxiety or mood related to consumer spending, it does not reflect actually what is going on right now. So it might be that, you know, it's hinting, you know, this is like a kind of future forecast of what will hit, you know, like an iceberg somewhere down the road. Now, on the other side of this is really what is Trump going to do? He's talking about stimulus, economic stimulus, but let's face it, there's very little monetary, there's really very little the Fed can do at this point other than dropping interest rates maybe 25 basis points. At the same time, the idea of getting a tax package, any kind of a tax cut through Congress is the probability is slim and none at this point, George. So that leaves Trump painted into a corner right now with really one option. And his only option to steer this major ship of, you know, the U.S. economy, like the Titanic, away from that iceberg is really to end this China trade war. So he's got one shot at this right now.
Yep.
And if he doesn't take it seriously, I think those that inverted yield curve is going to come true.
All right, my friend. Thank you. John Curtis, have a great Labor Day weekend, John. Twitter CEO Jack Dorsey from St. Louis appears to have been hacked on his own platform with several offensive tweets posted into his account. The tweets posted Friday, deleted within minutes, included some vulgarity and one message claiming that there was a bomb at Twitter's headquarters. Jeez. A former U.S. Marine believes that the cigar-shaped UFOs that have been spotted all over the country in recent months could be something beyond a classified military program. The mysterious objects, which often appear long, thin, and shaped like a snake, first came to light back in June when a YouTuber spotted a strange light above the Mojave Desert in California. Peter Davenport from the National UFO Reporting Center here with this weekly report. Hi, Peter. What do you have for us?
Well, good evening, George, and happy Labor Day weekend, everybody. If the reports I'd like to present tonight are anywhere close to the truth, I think black-eyed children may turn out to be the least of our problems. But the first case I'd like to start with comes from the 12th of August, Monday, 3 weeks ago. Husband and wife were driving north on the Garden State Parkway in New Jersey, which follows the eastern shoreline of that state. And as they drove north, very close to the turnoff for Atlantic City, they saw two very strange-looking white lights flying in unwavering formation from their left to right, that is, west to east. It captured their attention immediately. And as they continued to watch it, they were aghast to see the object slow down, descend, turn to the south, and stop motionless above the Garden State Parkway. Very, very dramatic sighting, and both of them very successful business people, probably excellent observers and excellent witnesses. Second report I'd like to present comes from Trebos, Pennsylvania. Gentleman reports that he was at work either Wednesday night or Thursday morning, George. I'm not sure which quite yet. He was in his place of work as a dispatcher when suddenly he heard a deep-throated thrumming sound, went outside, and he saw allegedly a triangular craft with four white lights in the corners of each of the apices, and the object suddenly started zigzagging and just disappeared from his sight. Third report comes from Reno. This is yesterday morning, 1:35 a.m. Gentleman was lying on a bench close to a casino, and he saw a white light streak across the sky in less than 5 seconds. Not a meteor, he emphasizes, underscored by the fact that a few seconds later, he saw the same thing following the first one. And that serves as a prelude to the third or fourth report, I guess. Husband and wife in Beloit, Wisconsin, last night at 9:20 p.m. were sitting outside admiring the beautiful night sky, and suddenly their attention was drawn to a prominent satellite. As they watched it, they noticed a very intensely bright white flash next to it. They saw five more flashes come from the same area of the sky. Obviously, the object was not a satellite, but something else. Last two reports came in this morning from Ohio. First one, 12:15 a.m. this morning, 15 minutes after midnight. Gentleman was driving just a few miles west of Wright-Patterson Air Force Base, and his attention was drawn to some very peculiar lights, as often happens. And he got this one on his dash camera. It's a triangular craft with very peculiar white lights all over it. And the last report is a few hours later, also from Ohio, Metropolis, Illinois. Actually, a gentleman was driving just north of Paducah and saw a silver, white, circular light about half the size of the moon streak from east to west. Horizontal flight. He said he saw it for only 2 seconds, but a very dramatic sighting. So that's my report, and lots of activity.
Lots.
And
we'll talk to you next week, Peter. Thank you so much. Peter Davenport from the National UFO Reporting Center with some compelling UFO cases. Back a couple of years ago, Jim Willis joined us talking about his work, Supernatural Gods. His latest book, which comes out in October, is called Lost Civilizations. Amazon, by the way, is taking pre-orders on that. But we're going to talk about Jim and all his work when we come right back on Coast to Coast AM. George Norrie back with you. Jim Willis back with us. After graduating from Eastman School of Music, Jim became a high school band and orchestra teacher during the week, a symphony trombonist on the weekends, a jazz musician at night, and a choral conductor on Sunday mornings. The author of 9+ books on religion and spirituality, he has been an ordained minister for more than 40 years while working part-time as a woodworker, handyman, and professor at the fields of world religions and instrumental music. Jim, what a varied background. Welcome back.
Well, good to be talking to you again, George. You always make me sound so interesting. I appreciate it.
By the way, I want to formally invite you back in October when Lost Civilizations officially comes out.
Oh, thank you. Thank you very much. It's always a pleasure to be with you.
Schedule with Lisa, and we'll get that taken care of. What have you been doing the last year?
Writing.
Or two.
Pretty much writing. I've now got, as of Lost Civilizations will be coming out next month, and then in December I have a book on out-of-body experiences coming out. And I just finished a book called Hidden Histories, which I just turned into the publisher at Visible Ink last week. And I've got another book about OBEs that's in front of one of the publishers. So I've been doing a lot of writing.
That's exciting stuff. OBEs are fascinating, aren't they?
Yeah, yeah. And it's something that I had never, ever expected to happen to me. So it was quite a change.
How do you go from being a musician to an ordained minister?
I don't know.
It was your calling, I guess.
It was a funny kind of a thing. If I had known that I was going to go into ministry, I never would have gone to music school. But as it turned out, it was the best thing I could have possibly done because, you know, music and the church were so tied up together. On the other hand, if I had known the direction my life was going to change when I left ministry and retired out here to the woods and began to experience out-of-body experiences and all that kind of thing, I don't know how that happened either. So I guess these things just go, and they kind of take over for us sometimes.
Now, Jim, I owe you some thanks, because as I've been reading Lost Civilizations, my advance copy that your publisher sent us, I'm reading the acknowledgments, and you said some of the kindest things about me than anybody's ever said.
Thank you. That was heartfelt. A while back, I don't know how long it was ago that we talked last, but a
couple of years. September 3rd, I think.
To be honest, when we talked that time, my wife and I came out here into the woods in South Carolina, and we were kind of going on retreat from the world. We were going to get away from the world. We hardly ever use clocks. We don't know what day it is. I asked my wife one time, "Do you know what day it is?" And she said, "No, but I think it's March." and so we're kind of sheltered out here. When the sun goes down, we go to bed. When the sun goes up, we get up. And we've just been living that kind of life. So as a result, with you being out in California and 3 hours behind us, I wasn't as familiar with your work as I would have been, because I'm fast asleep. But then, all of a sudden, when we talked, about 2 hours into the conversation, I think we were just about ready to close, and we've been talking a long time, and you said to me, "I got to ask you a question, Jim." And I said, "What's that?" And he said, "You said, do you honestly really believe that we have been visited by aliens, ancient aliens, or aliens even now, or, UFOs.
Right.
And George, there was a passion in your voice that just really said, "I've got to get to know this man. He's a real seeker." After 2 hours of talking, you can still have that excitement and that passion. And so, unfortunately, you did something bad to me. You got me hooked on Gaia TV, and I started binge watching. And you brought all these wonderful people into my life that I wouldn't have known about. And I started looking at your website, I started listening to your programs, and you just brought all of this good stuff into my life, and I really appreciated it. And so that's why I had to put you into the acknowledgments.
Well, and now here you are on this program again. You're going to come back in October, and when these other books are done, we'll have you back again.
Well, thank you. I appreciate it. I really do. I also want to thank you, before I forget, you were so kind to give me a back cover blurb for my OBE book when it comes out in December. They put your words right on the back cover of the book. I just got it yesterday, so I could take a look at it. So I appreciate that, too.
Let's talk very briefly about Lost Civilizations. We'll spend a lot of time on it in October when the book officially comes out.
Okay.
But tell me about this, because the subtitle, "The Secret Histories and Suppressed Technologies of the Ancients," that's pretty poignant.
Yeah. I had to visit a man one time when I was back in ministry. I got a call in the middle of the night, and this guy really wanted to see me. I could tell he was really upset. So first thing next morning, I went to see him, and he was telling me a story about how his father had died before he was born, just about a month or two before he was born. And so over the years, he had built up this picture in his mind of who his father was. And he never met his father, so it was just pretty much all of his made up things. Well, when his mother passed away, he went up into her attic, he was cleaning the house, and he found a bunch of his father's old journals. And in those journals, he discovered a man he never knew who was there. Totally different than the image he had built up in his head. And the kicker is that his father had died, he found out, of a disease that is often passed on genetically. So he had to go and get himself tested for this disease. I said, "How did that make you feel?" And he said, "It made me feel like I didn't know who I was." And that's exactly how I feel about Lost Civilizations. I think there's a part of our chapter a chapter of our history that has just been left out.
Yeah, it's gone. It's just gone.
We're, as Graham Hancock likes to say, we're a people with amnesia. And what really bothers me is that some of those lost civilizations are just lost to history. As we begin to look at them and look at the mythology and look at some of the archaeology that's there, they may have had a disease that we're showing today. They very well could have been showing symptoms of some of the same things that I was just hearing when I was listening to those news reports at the beginning of your show. We just think that we're immune and we're in the top of the heap and nothing's going to happen. And all of this lost history back there that could teach us so much. And that's why I just felt I really needed to.
Well, we'll look forward to talking to you about that in October, but let's talk about supernatural gods when we come right back. And welcome back to Coast, George Norrie with you, along with Jim Willis, talking about his work, Supernatural Gods, Spiritual Mysteries, Psychic Experiences, and Scientific Truths. Who are, Jim, in your opinion, the supernatural gods?
That kind of came out of ancient gods, which we talked about last time I was with you.
Mm-hmm.
In ancient gods, I had gone so far as to talk about the physical fact that what we call the gods today could have been remnants of a lost civilization that over the years, because they were technologically advanced, over the years, all their deeds, all their actions were blown up, and in years, generations down the line, they became known as gods. But I felt like something was missing, and I began to look a lot deeper into extra dimensions and different dimensions. And supernatural gods is about the idea of both the mythology, and there's archaeological evidence, too, that seems to say that there have been entities from different dimensions who have been able to step through those dimensions, at least mentally, and possibly even if we look at some of the literal things of the Old Testament of the Bible, for instance, possibly even physically. It just seems to me that a lot of those stories from the Old Testament, especially, and even in the New Testament with Jesus on the Mount of Transfiguration, and out of the ether steps Moses and Elijah, and the whole book of Revelation, a lot of that stuff with Elijah and Elisha seeing the stories they did, and a lot of that, it seems to be that what we have in religion today is the idea that people have divorced the reality of interdimensional travel,
mm-hmm.
and the reason they do it is because it's so wrapped up in liturgical language that they don't associate the two. It's the same thing. When a person stands up at Christmas time and says, "Hark, the herald angels sing," he's talking about a group of angelic beings, we call them angelic beings, stepping into this dimension and here with a heavenly music. I've got a sneaking suspicion that we're going to find a lot more of this, that the dimensions that we know are out there in the multiverse aren't as far apart as we think. As a matter of fact, I think we're going to be able to find that in the years to come, science and metaphysics, science and the paranormal, are getting closer and closer and closer together until basically they're like on one track right now. And we're using different language, but we're talking about the same kind of thing. I have no idea. I have no doubt that some, not all, but some of the UFO activity we see is actually extra-dimensional.
Right.
I think a lot of it is, actually nuts and bolts ships, too. But I think we're going to find a lot more of this. The whole idea of supernatural is just something above what we can experience. I had a great time watching the other day. I was watching Leonard Susskind on one of the YouTube channels, and he was talking about science coming to dead ends at some point. They won't be able to go any farther. And I couldn't help but think that if we're going to go any farther past the point where materialistic science can take us, it's going to have to be psychic. It's going to have to be spiritual.
And supernatural.
Supernatural.
Yeah, absolutely.
And that's supernatural gods right there in a nutshell.
You're an ordained minister, so you're spiritual, you're religious. Would it surprise you, Jim, if almost everything in the Bible, and this is not negating religion by any means, but would it surprise you if everything in the Bible was tied into some kind of extraterrestrial event or story?
Wouldn't surprise me one bit. As a matter of fact, I believe it is. I really believe it is. I think the folks who wrote the Bible were trying to describe events with language that they just were not able to really fully incorporate, and so they described them in ways that we call religious. Now we just go, we flip into that religious mindset. But I think if you go back into that language and look at what they were talking about, I think you're going to find at the basis of it all is extraterrestrial, both supernatural and from within this universe. I think they were actually seeing something.
It doesn't negate the belief in God, because eventually you have to get to the Creator somehow, don't you?
Yeah, and I think that's a problem, because I know I've been accused of that a lot, you know, of saying, well, you don't believe in God then. Well, what is the definition of God, you know? There's so many, God is a word that's used to denote something that's beyond our understanding. You can use Akashic Field. The Hindus are wonderful about this, using Brahman. Brahman is the essence where language cannot go. If you try to describe Brahman, you've missed it. If we have time, I got a funny story to tell you about.
But you have all the time you need, Jimmy.
when I was in teaching for the first time, when I was teaching Hinduism in my comparative religion course at college, I was familiar with a lot of religious concepts, but Hinduism I was pretty weak on. So I did a lot of study, and I had a good friend who had come from India and was very familiar, a very spiritual man. And I went to him the morning I was supposed to deliver this sermon about this message in class about Brahman and Atman. So I went to him and I gave him my whole message, and I was describing Brahman, and I had planned on make sure to telling the students that Brahman is the unknowable, the place where we cannot go, the place where language cannot penetrate, and Atman is the spirit within us, and the whole idea of Hinduism is Brahman and Atman, thou art that. They are connected. They are the same thing. And I thought I had it pretty good, and he listened to me, and he smiled, and I said, there, do I have it? And he nodded his head up and down with a great smile and said, no. He said, you can't talk about Brahman. Well, I guess I didn't get this straight, because I delivered the lecture, and when it came time for the midterm, I put on the test in one paragraph or less, describe the Hindu concept of Brahman. And students were all writing. One guy, one of my best students, hands in his test. When I went home to test it, to check it, to correct it that night, he had left that one blank. So the next day I show up in class, and I'm handing out the papers, and he's sitting in the back. He's smiling like a Cheshire cat. He says, Professor Willis, did anybody answer question 8? And I said, well, you know, they at least tried. And he said, you're telling me I'm the only one who got it right. He had left it blank. And in doing so, he had proved that he was the only one, including me, that really got the essence of Brahman. You can't put it into words.
We're with Jim Willis, his website, jimwillis.net. Jim, what are animal envoys?
I was hoping to have some for you tonight. I'm sitting on my front porch in the middle of the night, and the last two nights...
Do I hear crickets out there?
Pardon me?
Do I hear crickets out there?
Yes, you do.
That's what crickets. I thought.
But we've had coyotes the last couple of nights, and I was hoping to have some tonight for you, but we haven't had them yet. Must be the dark of the moon.
They do howl, don't they?
No, animal envoys go to the whole idea of shamanism, and the idea that we live in a between world with the world below us and the world above us. The world above us is the world of skies and fairies and angels and flying things and birds. The angels, the world below us is usually interpreted by our brains anyway as the animal kingdom. And we find this right throughout history. You know, you go to the caves of Western Europe and you crawl deep down into those caves, Lascaux and all the rest. And, you know, what do you find? You find pictures of animals. Göbekli Tepe was buried a generation or two after it was made, and now that it's, you know, when Professor Schmidt, before he died, started excavating there and finding all of those animals carved. I have a theory about it, because I've done an awful lot of engaged an awful lot of OBEs now, and I've got a feeling that when we travel that, well, what the shamans would call the lower world, when we go into the earth spirits, we come back with something that we can't describe, and our brains have to find words to use it. And so they describe it in terms of animals, animal envoys that come to us from that particular world. Whether we're actually seeing real animals or whether our brains are just interpreting what we see in animal-like figures is hard to tell, but it goes way back. The Egyptians, half animal, half man. The same thing in the Sumerians, and you see the same thing in the Aztecs and in the Incas. And that's what I refer to when I talk about the animal envoys.
Are they dangerous?
I've never had a bad experience myself, but I don't want to say it just because I don't want to limit it to my experience. I've had some pretty unbelievable experiences with seeing animals that look terribly ferocious when you're out of body, but in looking back, it wasn't that way at all. So I don't want to say no. All I can say is I've never had a bad experience with them.
What about werewolves and things like that? I mean, are they part of this?
You know, I think they must be. And like I say, that's outside of my experience. But I haven't done a lot of study of the mythology, but it's so widespread that I just don't know. I can't really talk about it with any kind of authority at all.
Jim, in terms of the word spirituality, what does that mean to you?
That's a hard one too, because it's a word that's so loaded. When you say spirituality, a lot of people like to use the word spirituality instead of
religion.
People say I'm spiritual, but I'm not religious, and I know what they mean. On the other hand, spirituality to some people is a kind of La La Land kind of idea, you know, the idea that I'm spiritual, I'm going to go around acting spiritual.
I think spirituality is people are believers in an intelligent design, they're believers in a God, but they're not believers in organized religion. Is that possible?
Oh, yeah, I think so. But I would like to go even a little farther than that, though. I mean, I think there's people who are spiritual who don't even, like, for instance, Buddhism. There is no God in Buddhism in the sense that we understand it here in the West. And yet some of the Buddhists I've known have been some of the most spiritual people I've ever met. So it's really hard, and they're part of a very organized religious system, and yet they're very spiritual. So I don't know. Language is tough, isn't it? And, you know, for someone like you who deals with it all the time, that's got to be a tough thing, because you can say one thing and someone might be listening to you and hear something totally different. I guess if I had to define spirituality, I'd probably say it's people who look to the fact that there is an other beyond us or in us, and we can somehow connect with it.
I mean, have you even come up with your own theories on why we're here in the first place? Well, what are we here for? I mean, again, religious people will say you're here to perfect your soul, to go to heaven, and all those possibilities, which are very strong possibilities. But in terms of pure definition of why are we here, what's the answer?
Well, I can't give an answer, but I can give my answer. I look upon life as a great school. We are here. We come from the source. We come from the Akashic field. We come through the Higgs field and gather mass. Strange things happen. Somehow we manage to develop life, intelligent life, sentient life, human life. Nobody really knows how that happens. I have to believe it has to do with something bigger than all of us. I've had good friends who are biologists who talk about the miracle of life. And they don't even believe in God or anything, but they talk about the miracle of life because nobody knows how it comes. I somehow come to believe that we come into this life to gather experience in the material world. And the reason for that, in my way of thinking, is that we live here in this world in a world of duality, up and down and left and right and wrong and all that kind of stuff. Duality means separateness. Now, there is no separateness in the source. If we are ever going to experience individuality, it has to be in a world of duality. And so I look upon this life as a school that teaches us about separateness, about being separate, about individuality. And when we're done, we go back to the source, carrying those lessons with us, lessons that can be learned no place else except here in this life.
You talk about some of your OBEs. How many have you had personally?
Oh, I wouldn't even know. Hundreds.
Really?
Hundreds. Yeah.
You're like Robert Monroe.
Well, it's funny you should mention, right? He was the one that got me going. And when I had my first OBE, and then it was followed soon after by another one, it was as a result of a specific program that I was following William Buhlman, Bill Buhlman was doing. And when I heard that Bill Buhlman was going to be up at the Monroe Institute doing a week-long workshop, this was about 6 or 8 months after I started engaging OBEs, I went up and I spent a week with Bill up there at the Monroe Institute and going through his program. And some of that program is what makes up the new book that I've got coming out, The Quantum Akashic Field. And in that book that's coming out in December, I talk about a lot of my OBEs and try to come up with some kind of a step-by-step plan, a how-to-do-it book, so that people can learn how to engage OBEs on their own.
I've had one out-of-body experience, Jim, when I was 11 years old. I've never been able to duplicate it again. Sometimes I think in my dream state maybe something's going on, but
yeah.
I haven't been able to do it in a very coordinated
way.
Well,
the program that I followed, of course, there are shortcuts that I don't do. You know, I'm talking about drugs, either synthetic or natural.
Yeah, I don't do that either. Jim, stay with us. We're at the top of the hour. We'll come back. We'll talk some more about your work, Supernatural Gods, and we'll open up the phone lines with Jim Willis on Coast to Coast AM.